Well, hey everyone, my name's Cronus. I'm here on the Musicians Insider. Today we have musician and SEO Catfish Comstock. He's worked with numerous Fortune 500 companies and he has a pretty cool band. I believe the name of it is Cyborg Assassins. Is that correct?
That's the new project, yo.
That's new. So I think I'm going to let Catfish introduce himself a little to my audience and tell me a little bit about what you're up to lately and what's going on with you these days.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Thanks for having me on, first of all. And you and I have known each other for a long, long time, but seldom had an opportunity to actually talk in person. It's kind of weird how social media works.
It's always a group session. You become friends on Facebook, you comment here and there, and you realize that we're doing the same thing. So I was like, you know, it's about time I get you on the show, especially if you have a new project going during this crazy time.
Yeah, you know, this crazy time is actually the reason for the new project. So prior to this, you know, I had been in a band called Dive Bomber for a lot of years that played all over Southern California and had an opportunity to open up for some of my childhood heroes during that time, like Skid Row and Quiet Riot and Lita Ford and Great White and all that kind of like 80s, you know, nostalgia tour type of stuff. Had a great time doing that. Probably that band was most famous, for having the Painted Man.
He's all colored up in, I remember we saw he's all in green, I believe, or red. Is he red or green?
Depends on the day.
Okay, because I've seen different pictures, but we saw you at the Key Club, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So
that was awesome.
So that was a lot of fun, you know, and then I moved out to Vegas to try to tour with Dive Bomber and, you know, after about a year or so trying to put together a new band, we had a couple shows here and there. We went on a short little tour up north to Seattle and Oregon and stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, it just didn't work out. And so I tried to start a new project where I was going to be doing vocals. And that was a project called Voodoo Potion. We opened up for Power Man 5000 at the NAMM show, had an auspicious beginning. But, you know, because of COVID and some other issues, that didn't work out either. And I found myself for the first time really since 1991, not in a, you know, rehearsing band and couldn't really do any rehearsing as a kidney transplant, you know, recipient. This is the kind of thing where I've got to be extra vigilant, if you will. A buddy of mine, ironically, this guy, DJ Highlighter, my friend, Polly Pollywood, who's been a great supporter of mine musically throughout the years, said, hey, man, I'm doing a lot of EDM stuff. You should get a copy of FL Studio and do some EDM stuff with me. And I didn't really, when I got the software, I had no intention really of like creating a new sort of hard rock project. I really just got it to mess around with some dance music. And then it just sort of evolved where I was making these cool EDM style tracks. And I thought, you know what, why don't I take some of these ideas and put them into this sort of context that I would as a rock song and then layer on some of my guitar and my vocals and see how it turns out. And all of a sudden, 10 songs later, I'm having a really good time. I've got my first single, Steampunk Woman, is coming out September 17th. It's already been uploaded to DistroKid. And it'll be out on Spotify. So, you know, if you could do that pre-save, if you're out there in the audience, I would appreciate it.
I'll put the link right here.
Okay, cool. I appreciate that. Thank you, man. But yeah, it's just been quite an adventure through all this and sort of reinventing myself. And now what I find is really interesting, you know, prior to this in the bands that I've been in, I've always sort of like wrote these riffs, right? And the way it works is you go to practice and you got to play the riff like, I don't know, 20, 30 times before somebody in the band wants to start jamming along with it. It really sort of catches hold. So it's a great filter using that system for the stuff that's maybe not as cool. But what I found for this was I was writing the EDM tracks before I ever even wrote guitar or vocals. So then I would come in afterwards and sort of figure out the vocal track. And then the guitar was really sort of the last thing.
And it's probably your comfort, right? The guitar is your comfort instrument, so usually you do it first, so here, you know, you're not gonna have any trouble putting cut guitar in later.
Yeah, exactly. It was sort of just, it was one of those things where I needed the beat to, I mean, I there were a couple Voodoo Potion songs that I've sort of retained but reworked into this format, so that was a little bit of a different exercise. But learning now to sing and play what I wrote, because I've never done it before, together, is the current challenge, and is going to be the thing that takes a little while before I'm ready to do this live. But I've in the last couple of weeks made some good progress in doing that. But it's been quite an exercise to figure out, like, okay, on this syllable in the middle of these two syllables is where the downstroke is. You know what I mean? And then just practicing that and kind of getting a, like, what does that feel like to do it? And then figuring out markers where, like, if I'm not doing this at this point, I'm doing it wrong. You know, just sort of training yourself to go through that whole process has been a really unique experience too.
100%. I mean, I feel that way too. Like, I'm the lead singer, but when I was in this band here, I was a guitar player. I'm the guy in the Velvet. Yeah. But to change to lead singer is such, it's such a responsibility, and it's hard to do, and it's hard to get people to take you seriously that were in the other band sometimes, and you have to sometimes just start with new people. But if you sang your whole life and you didn't have an instrument, it's kind of weird. You see people standing around awkward with a microphone, right? So being a guitar player, you have that to hide behind, but also it's your machine gun, it's your instrument, it's your thing. Yeah. So I feel you, man. I have two guitars right there, my two Music Mans. I got a Godin acoustic I love too. I'm wearing my in-ears from 64 Audio. I got them from a NAMM show and they hooked me up. So I'm on a good little trajectory with gear. Maybe I'll get you on when I do my gear podcast episode where we can talk about gear. Any cool gear that you're into lately? And I'm just going to put my power in here.
You know, I've been very, very blessed in my life to have worked in music stores back in the 90s, right? When it was still cool to be a guitar guy in a music store in the 90s, because it was before the internet was really a thing. And so you were still sort of that wizard down the street that you had to go and talk to if you wanted to know what was going on.
Right? Like, you go in the guitar store and then someone's like, how does he do Thunderstruck? And a guy knows how to do it. Everyone's like, how is he doing it? And you're all like 13, 14 years old looking at these guitars.
Yeah, now guys, like, they're gods. 6-year-old kids. To get on there and they're already shredding better than you can. So it's a different world we live in today. But back then, I was able to collect a 78 Les Paul Custom Black Beauty that's been my sort of main axe for the last 20 something years, maybe even longer than that. I don't want to date myself too bad, but I think I already have probably. You know, one of the interesting things that ended up being a part of this album, or this first single that's going to be a part of the larger album, is the first time I've ever really stayed in the box through the entire recording process out of necessity, because even though I had a Marshall stack at my disposal, that's what I play. I play a 2210 800, which is that, you know, it's the later 800 where they had the 900 circuit, like not circuitry, but design with the channel switching and the effects loop and the built-in reverb, right? Which was part of the 900 series. But it's still got the 800 technology. And I got, dude, I bought this head for $375 back in the day. Like, it's been the best investment I ever made.
The 50-watt version of that? I think I had a 50-watt version of that. Like, you know, like, yeah. They had, like, it was like you could go louder without having to turn it all the way up kind of thing.
I wish I had the 50-watt version, because the 100 watts, like, you know, I'm constantly fighting sound guys wherever I go. It's telling me I don't need that kind of volume. And I'm like, dude, if it's not moving my pants, I can't play. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to have that presence, you know?
Well, but so how do you feel about these? Because if you have this, do you need an amp?
Yeah, well, I kind of do. You know, like, for me, man, for live, but that's what I'm getting at. For this project, I couldn't, like, for the number of hours I spent, even just doing the solo for this song, I couldn't really, like, blast out the people I live with and my neighbors during quarantine, right? So I used a plugin by Nembrini, Nembrini, and they do a lot of really cool amp simulators, but they have one that I used that's actually modeled off of my amps.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, so it was really cool. And, I mean, it's not the same. I'm not going to, like, sit here and say how, like, you know, I don't need my amp anymore. I would have preferred to, you know, go out to Hollywood and hang out with my buddy Bill Metoyer out there, who typically records my stuff. If you're unfamiliar with Bill, he was the vice president of Metal Blade back in the 80s. Okay. And you know, he did like, you know, some of Slayer's early stuff and a lot of other great 80s bands from the thrash era. And he's just, you know, Skull 7 Productions. He's a great guy to work with, but it just wasn't feasible for what I'm doing with this project right now. And also, if I'm being honest, as a, you know, as a sort of newbie in the home recording world, I didn't want to deal with signal to noise ratio and sort of analog like issues that you get into when you start live tracking, right? So for me, just keeping everything in the box, which basically means, you know, you're not using the analog stuff, right? It's all digital. That allowed me to get my music to the point where I found this guy on soundbetter.com. This guy that is a Yod, I think is his name. He's works for Planet Waves, and he's an engineer that's worked on like Pet Shop Boys and Bryan Adams and Sia and like just this eclectic group of folks that I thought was an interesting mix between rock and you know, and more of the some of the styles that I'm trying to get to with this new project. So he did the mixing and the mastering on Steampunk Woman, and so it, you know, it worked out really good.
Are you happy with Steampunk Woman, and what kind of video do you envision for it?
You know, it's funny, the video that I'd like to do is probably not the video I'm going to end up doing, just based on financial, you know, limitations. Unfortunately, as fate would have it, this last month, like, I don't know, 40 days ago, I was told that I wasn't going to be able to renew my lease out here in Las Vegas, where I've been for 5 years. And, you know, coming up with the money to move and pay double rent in May and everything else sort of tapped me out in terms of the things that I have at my disposal. But fortunately, I do have an extensive network of friends who are, you know, really cool to me. And it might end up being like the song is really predicated about the appreciation of steampunk women characters in both film and anime. And that's what Cyborg Assassins is really all about, is the dichotomy between how technology is enabling us and how it's killing us. Right. And using characters that are cyborg assassin characters in both film and anime to tell stories around themes like that is what I'm kind of trying to get into, and sort of a celebration of anime culture and science fiction and, you know, things that have resonated with me throughout my life. I mean, I'm an old school Robotech head from the early days as far as anime goes. And I've always been around steampunk sort of culture, but I've never really explored it that much until I really had nothing better to do during the pandemic, but to really like rediscover some of my science fiction, Dungeons and Dragons, kind of nerdy, you know, for lack of a better word. And I mean nerdy in the coolest way possible. But, you know, I think with EDM, with an embrace of EDM culture too, which I've always, again, been around, but never really like, you know, never dived into the deep end of it until now. So the more that I got into all this, the more I realized it was a really good backdrop for this project. And then I was able to get cyborgassassins.com and basically every social media profile out there with Cyborg Assassins, just the name itself. And that was kind of the universe's validation that I'm heading in the right direction.
I'll tell you, I've really held back on releasing anything my whole life that was mine. I got a new album and we finished it right before the pandemic, and I was able to get it on a couple of radio stations like Toronto's Edge 102 and KLOS in LA some shows. I got to play the Viper Room, but like I'm still waiting to come out with the album and push it and market it with my team because of the pandemic. I'm locked down in Canada.
I see.
I've been learning how to do this stuff, and it's like there's these seminars that you can take on how do you do a TikTok video where from 0 to 3 seconds you shoot from this angle, and then from 3 to 7 seconds you shoot from that angle, and
that's
you edit
the world we live in.
You edit the endpoints really close, so it's an annoying video style that people will then you explain what you're selling at the end. It's weird. How do you, as an SEO, try to take that and put it to music to help market your music? Because, you know, like, we should be the biggest musicians in the world if we're so good at SEO, right? But it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what's ironic? So here's what's really funny. I got into SEO in, like, 1997/98 trying to promote my band. I got a job at an internet service provider as a customer service agent because I had dropped out of college after 6 years of partying at the University of Arizona and San Diego State, right? I went to like Party U and then Party U 2. And while I was at San Diego State, I got myself in a band. And that's when I realized I don't want to go corporate right now. I want to be in this world of rock and roll. And I didn't have the pedigree to do that without spending the 7 years in music retail that I did. That was really the education I really needed to get into this industry and sort of become authentic.
Real world
and
stuff.
During that period of time though, you know, I had sort of like worked at the, you know, the music stores in San Diego I had wanted to. And after 7 years, I kind of was ready for a change. And I got this customer service job behind a computer, and I learned how to code HTML during my downtime of like waiting for people to answer the phone. And I built myself a website at heavymusic.com. That was my, got into affiliate marketing, and all of a sudden I outranked mp3.com on Alta Vista for the word mp3.
Nice.
And
Alta Vista. Awesome.
Yeah. That's before Google was born. Right. So that tells you how
InfoSeek. All the web,
Hotbot, Northern Lights, all that stuff, man. So the thing about it was, and I owned Web Position 1.0, right? Like that was the big thing back in the day. But the thing was, is I learned is that people weren't searching for my music. They were searching for music that they already knew, right? So SEO has sort of a limited ability to really drive, you know, fans and engagement, and social media, and specifically what you just talked about, which I'm getting into now, is around TikTok and IG. That's really where you got to be in order to be relevant, right?
Yep.
And so we're no longer just musicians, because nobody cares. You've got to be a full content creator that uses music as one of the vehicles to build a brand around yourself and your band.
And to promote the podcast, for example, like you take a cut from an interesting part of our conversation where we had an interesting moment where something was really a good tidbit. Then you cut that and you throw it into Instagram, but you don't give them the answer and you make them want to watch the rest of it. And then that's how dumb it is. It's like daily.
Well, it's not so much. I would hesitate to classify it as dumb as just different, right? Like you and I grew up in a different world with different expectations. And I live with two small girls, you know, who are 10 and 7. And it's been a really eye-opening experience watching them grow up and watching their engagement habits with the internet and online and you know, Fortnite and gaming is another thing that Cyborg Assassins is really all about. And learning that whole ecosystem and learning where people are and what their lives are like and trying to unlearn some, like, I don't want to be that old guy that couldn't change that I used to gripe about my parents being.
Is your album going to come out as 12 songs on a format?
No, that's what I was going to tell you. Like, I don't see a value in doing an album anymore.
Like, we talked about the other day on here.
Yeah, I feel like it's just a string of singles. And then when I get to the point where there's like six or seven singles released, I'll give you it as an album package with like maybe three at one time as sort of the bonus of the thing coming out. But dude, it takes so long to make content. And to your point, like it takes so long to make all the supporting content to promote the content. Once you try to do that across 10 songs, I mean, look at Miley Cyrus came out with Plastic Hearts last year. It already feels old. Maybe she was able to promote what, one or two or three of those songs. By the way, that's a great album. I mean, I don't know. I know that's weird to say Miley Cyrus.
Well, you know, the money behind that album, but the amount of production and people behind that record, like that's going to sound incredible.
Well, right. But I mean, the point is how much of it's wasted now because the audience has already moved on, like they're ready for the next thing. And you can't even take advantage of that in an album format. So And that's on a huge budget with a lot of people, with a big team, with that's got a huge financial investment in trying to do that. And still, it's the limitation of the attention span of the world that we live in today, right? So for me, I think just Cyborg Assassin is going to release a bunch of singles. I'm looking forward to trying to get another one out this year. I chose September because I knew I had, like, I spent all last year learning how to create music, and I still got a long way to go on that, you know, but now I've shifted focus and I'm taking this year to learn how to market music. And
come back here and talk to me. Talk to me more when you learn more, and let me know what you'll learn, because I'd love to hear about it, because this is a real hard one for musicians. Like, people waste so much money pissing away money at Spotify playlist people, you know, and like stuff like that, where it's like, it doesn't matter if you're on a bunch of playlists unless the people who put you on there care.
Right. That's the thing about it. I'm not really interested in paying to play, so to speak, in that space. I've always, you know, I've never had a problem with buy-ons in the real world, because you can play 10 shows in front of 50 people or one show in front of 500 people. And if you play one show in front of 500 people, you're typically making a bigger impression for the people that see you. So for me, I've never really had a problem with that kind of investment, you know, especially because I've been fortunate to be in bands that have been popular enough to be able to, you know, sell the tickets when necessary. Not always. Let's not kid ourselves. There's definitely times where you take a loss on you know, investing in your business. But the point being that for me, all those situations created authentic relationships that I still have today with you know, my fan base and friends that were kind enough to support me. And to your point, if I'm going to invest in digital things, it's probably going to be remarketing against people that have already engaged with my brand on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube or TikTok, where I'm just using it as a way to distribute the reminder that, hey, by the way, you already know Cyborg Assassins. Here's the latest thing. Come back to the party and hang out, you know?
And corporate, you know how it's different when your company is 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, you do things different at the different stages. So with bands, I think that's another sort of thing. Like, when you don't have any fans, you can't just act like Miley Cyrus, because she has the fan base. They know they're going to sell it. So when you're coming out, you're introducing yourself. It's a different market. People aren't looking for new music. They need to be told about it. They need to be bugged by their buddy. Have you heard this song? They need to see, like, there was 20 years ago, we discussed this in Toronto. I remember with some musician friends, we were at Canadian Music Week, and we're talking about how someone needs to tell you about it. You need to hear it on the radio, and then you need to have it, like, three different things happen for someone to buy your album. And now it's a totally different digital world. And what are those emotions that need to be connected? It seems like if no one tells you to do something, you're not going to know about it. So almost your advertising has to tell them. So, like, I haven't bought any ads yet because I didn't want to do anything until the pandemic was figured out. And now we're like, next week, we're going to start putting together a bunch of ads, and we're going to start pushing out things on social media where they're like 15-second ads here and there that go into people's feeds, because that's what people are expecting now, is ads. And if you don't have them in all the different areas, you can't just do it organically. You have to be on the paid as well, especially for music.
Well, that's part of the platform too. Although I will say, with TikTok, man, there's no better platform for music than TikTok. And the reason is because when people are scrolling through TikTok, they got the music on. If you're scrolling through Facebook or IG, it's muted. If you're on TikTok, you got that on because that's part of the experience. And really, like, in this kind of world, it's like, if somebody doesn't know you and they don't know your music, like, how much of attention span are you really expect them to give you to make a decision anyway, right? Like, if you can't figure out in a minute how to, like, grab their attention and get them to, like, interact again, or at least, like, see the logo and make a first impression.
Yeah. Right? It's the impression. Well, and TikTok, I'm going to just jump in quick before I forget my point. Yeah. But TikTok, no, I need to nail that to the wall. TikTok, they'll see you once playing your little instrument, doing your thing, and if it impresses them, they're going to skip by it, and then they'll see it again, they'll skip by it. Like that saxophone guy. You know that guy that dresses up as Sasquatch?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen his things millions of times. I've never clicked on them, but you start, now you know him, just from seeing
it. Now you know him. And that's a thing, man. Like, you know, us old school guys, like being famous is not what it used to be, right? Like everyone's famous.
Nobody's
like, everyone is famous now. Like yeah. Everyone is famous. And so no one's famous. Right. And so like the thing about it is really not about being famous or being a rock star anymore or all that kind of stuff. When you grew up in the 80s, what it was supposed to be like. And ironically, like I know some 80s rock stars because I met them throughout the years, and you know, their lives are not anywhere close to being any of that anymore, you know. And
unless you're Metallica.
Yeah, well, I mean, unless you know, unless you're really in that rarefied air, right? But for most of us, what this is really about is learning to create an audience, a fan base that digs your music, you being able to use that platform to tell your story or your stories through your music, and creating a sense of community around what it is that you do, and a value proposition that, hey, you know, if you tune in to my station, if you will, I'm going to provide you with some kind of entertainment that's going to help you get through this life. You know what I mean? And that's what we're really all doing here, right? Is we're all trying to just get through this life.
And you can't tell them you're going to do it. You just got to show them.
Right. No, you can't tell. I mean, look, nobody wants to be told anything. Just show me. What do you got? I'm going to pay attention to you for about 2.8 seconds on TikTok. I'll give you the opportunity. What do you got? And if it's not cool, dude, there's thousands of other people on there that have cool stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've been on TikTok lately, yeah. But some of that shit blows my mind. And I'm just like, wow.
Well,
this
I'm like
the world today that I'm trying to like penetrate in the consciousness of and provide value.
So I started playing like guitar, singing, and riding on a hoverboard all at the same time. And I could play my whole set like that. It's pretty funny, but it's like now I don't want to pigeonhole myself into having to ride the hoverboard all the time because I'm going to kill myself. So my newer thoughts are I'm going to have go-go dancers on hoverboards and I'll just play something like that. Cause that's, and I'll maybe come out and do it on the ending on one song or something.
Well, you got to figure out how to make it a complete story within the context of what you're doing, right? Like those girls that you're talking about, if you're going to do that, they need to be at your show doing that on the stage while you're playing as well. Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Go-go dancers on the side when you're performing live, right. like a DJ. Cause I don't have I fired all bass players are fired. All bass players are fired. I use serum. We use serum.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny about that? So on my new songs, I play the bass, I play the guitar, and I sing. But I also have bass lines that I've created. Either I use loops that I like, or to your point with serum or OC3 on FL Studio is what again, that's what I'm using. So what I find is that there's the bass. I like to do the bass lines in a traditional way that augment what the guitar is doing and give it that, you know, that power, that oomph, or the play off it, right? That creates that sort of weave.
Like Alice in Chains.
Yeah. But also bass lines from an EDM standpoint, I think serve almost a different purpose. So if anything, I have extra bass in the things that I'm doing, which I think with an EDM, you know, I'm trying to move people too, man. I mean, it's not that I don't love playing music to old dudes in black shirts, because that's who I am. And that's who a lot of my friends are. But, you know, I want to also appeal to a younger audience that has different expectations. And I want people to be able to come to my shows and to be able to, like, you know, dance it in from an industrial standpoint or an EDM standpoint, if that's what they're into. But also that people that are into like hard rock music, you know, will also gravitate towards what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to create.
So the beat is what changes sometimes, not really what you're doing. So for me, I'm still playing 90s alt rock, just over 2015 to 2020 EDM style beats.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm kind of trying to do. Although
it feels the same.
Like it feels the same in a lot of ways. The guitar parts are probably like not as intense as maybe Dive Bomber was, for example, because in Dive Bomber, like I'm the only guitar player, right? So there's a lot of space to fill.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of intensity. And not that these aren't, I got some of the same kind of riffs, but there are a lot of other times where I'm playing more like complementary guitar parts. There's still distortion. It's still that hard rock feel, but it's a lot more AC/DC than Metallica because,
color.
You know, Yeah, it's color, it's emphasis, and it's you know, it's just overall ambience. So because at the end of the day, what I'm really trying to do is create an atmosphere that supports the telling of the story that I'm trying to tell within the song.
That's really cool. Do you have a bunch of songs that you're working on now then? Or what do you?
Yeah, so I've got 10 songs that are basically done. I'm working on right now. So my first song is Steampunk Woman. I'm working on a second song called Flamethrower, where I'm trying to like get that to a point where I can, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to go with Yode again as the mix master engineer. I've met a lot of people actually through Clubhouse lately, the social app Clubhouse, which, yep, by the way, if you're not on Clubhouse yet, man, that's like drinking from a fire hose every day that you want to tune in about whatever topic.
It's a lot of information.
It's a lot of information, especially I've been really getting into NFTs lately.
I was going to ask you, did you drop your NFT for your new song? Is that going to happen?
No, I'm going to do that 2 weeks after. And I'm really like, I'm really hoping that, so if you're not familiar with NFTs for your audience, it's non-fungible token, right? And it's essentially like, it's digital ownership via a ledger in the blockchain. Right, is basically what it is. And it's basically like a node in the blockchain that you write to the blockchain with your gas fees that says, this is the digital owner of this file. And it points to, the file actually doesn't live on the blockchain. The file lives somewhere else, typically like the interplanetary file system via a service like Pinata or something like that. And I know I'm getting really technical for a lot of
people. No, this is great. Try
to keep it high level,
but please go into how someone can actually go about making something if they don't know how.
Well, you usually, what you want to do is you want to mint something in one of the marketplaces. So OpenSea or Rarible is probably like the most popular for Ethereum, if you're going to be on the Ethereum blockchain, which is also currently the most popular. And probably if you're somebody that has an audience, that might be the best place for you to be in terms of the amount of money that's being spent on Ethereum. It's sort of the standard, right? The problem with Ethereum, at least if you're environmentally conscious, is it works on what's called a proof of work protocol instead of proof of stake, which, you know, it also, again, probably has more value in the long term if you're on Ethereum, but there are other chains that you can mint on, most notably Tezos or Matic. And by the way, if you get onto Clubhouse, I'm in a group called NFTS.tips, and I'm part of the music team on there. And that organization is a nonprofit that's dedicated towards empowering people with NFT technology. So if you're hearing the podcast and you're interested in NFTs, you want to, you know, you have no idea where to start, the best thing to do is jump into a NFTS.tips Clubhouse room and just kick it for a while and just get your mind blown like I did for like 6 weeks. And I'm still, you know, making sense, because the thing is like art and music in the NFT world is different, right? And the reason I even know about NFTs, by the way, interestingly enough, so I'm creating a character to represent cyborg assassins called Frank after Frankenstein. I'm naming him after the original cyborg assassin, right? Maybe not the original, but one of the original famous ones.
Nice.
And I have a this guy Sean from Halloween Tattoos, who's a really cool dude and does some crazy amazing artwork, is drawing the character. And part of our contract negotiation was, hey, you can use this artwork to sell merch, represent your band. I still can use it to show that this is what I do, right? So standard stuff. But if you want to upload it to an NFT or any kind of art platform, that's going to require a separate contract, which we will negotiate later. And I was like, NF what, dude? What are you talking about, man? I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. So that, ironically, my friend Laura Beatty invited me to Clubhouse like the same day. So once again, the universe said, thou shalt go here and learn. And that's what I've been doing. So I've not minted anything yet. I don't plan on minting anything yet, because I'm really trying to, the thing about music that's different than art is who's collecting it. And it's about providing value to people who are potential buyers of your NFT, right? And so for me, It's not just about the artwork. It's about the
story behind it.
And not only that, but what are you giving somebody, right? As a result of their interaction. And you can't just think about the initial purchase, because one of the things about NFTs that's
derivatives
is derivatives. Well, not just derivatives, but royalties on the secondary market.
So
somebody buys your, yeah.
So I love where you're going on all this. So I'm just letting you run with it, because I was going to ask you to talk about it and see how far you've gotten into this, because this is the biggest thing that can help musicians that are starting out right now, is to get in on this early. But also, you don't want to blow your money on some bullshit to people who are trying to sell NFT stuff. So I want to show people how to avoid that.
Well, this is what I'm saying. The thing I found right now is that Tezos is a lot cheaper, right, than Ethereum.
Yeah,
so you might want to.
I mean,
even less to mint on but the thing is, it requires having Tezos to mint. And then you go to a place like Calumet or Hickaknunk, which is really hard to spell, but it's got a cool, like, little underground culture over there. Hickaknunk. From a branding perspective, those guys got a lot to learn, but it's, like I said, it's developed its own culture and it's a cool spot to be. Matic is another sidechain. It's actually a sidechain of Ethereum. But the problem with Matic is currently you can't just buy Matic. You got to buy Matic on the Ethereum blockchain and then transfer it over to the Polygon blockchain and pay gas fees to do that. And it gets kind of complicated for the average user. If you're saying,
that's
hey,
really
you buy my stuff,
hard to learn. Yeah, unless you're already in the crypto. And like, artists, should labels make their own crypto coin? Like, if you're, like I said to someone the other day, if you're Snoop Dogg, do you make your own coin? You know, like,
I mean, I think you can, but it's a little bit different. So it's not, you're not going to make a coin like Ethereum. You're going to make a coin that's probably like a participation type of coin, right? There's companies called Rally. If you look up Rally NFT, right now you have to apply because they're small and emerging, but they're letting folks basically create these coins that, as people interact with your brand, right, they earn equity in the brand. And
right,
so this is going to be the space of the future, no doubt. So if you jump on it now and you get acquainted, this is what I say, just get into Clubhouse. You got to get an invitation to Clubhouse, which
I've got a Clubhouse invite. If anyone wants to get on one, you probably get like 2 or 3 invites per person. So you got to kind of ask someone who's already in there.
But and now they support Android now too. So that was a barrier to entry for a lot of folks.
Right. It was like you had to be the cool iPhone kid to be in the club.
Yeah. But nowadays you can just get on there, and that's probably the best like way to really learn about NFTs, because the thing about Clubhouse is it really facilitates relationship building, because you're really just you're talking to people real time, right? And it's not hard to find somebody, especially in NFTs.tips. It's not hard to find somebody that will walk you through, you know, kind of the process. The question is, what are you going to mint? And if you're just like a musician and you just want to like mint your song with the audio file, for example, as an unlockable, because the file size, you can't mint the whole thing. That's where, like I said, that's where this whole like collaboration piece comes in. And unfortunately, one of the things that's holding us back as musicians right now, and I think Rarible just did split wallets, but other than Rarible, I think Cargo.build on the Matic network is the only other one that currently has split wallets. And if you don't have split wallets, that means you got to manage like everything offline in terms of the financial part of it. And that sort of takes away from the concept here, right? Like, who wants to manage that relationship perpetually?
So to bring it back to the musician's world a little better, like, here's all my picks, for example, a bunch of picks that I love. You know, this is Dimebag's pick from the stage with Lil X is in it. This is Jerry Cantrell's. Here's Lemmy. Here's Jason Newsted. There's bass player from White Zombie. Got a lot of picks here. How can an artist, like, so we were talking about, I was talking to a friend of mine about Kenny Aronoff was one of the first drummers being involved in an NFT thing. And essentially, your drumstick would be licensed to then be make derivative drumstick NFTs. So, like, I don't know how it would work, but, like, this is the NFT from that. This is the NFT from this show for my drumstick. And it's now people buy it. So you can create that kind of content.
Yeah, you can. That's a little bit in the advanced world, right? When you're creating derivatives that people care enough about that they're going to want to like.
Well, drumsticks are a good idea.
No, I agree. I totally agree with that. I'm just saying, again, if you're a famous person, that might work for you, right? If you're the average person who's listening to this and you just want to get an NFT going for your band, what you would probably do is strike up a deal with whoever created your artwork for your band cover, your album cover or your single cover in my case, right? And then you would probably split the proceeds of that and you would have maybe a 30-second clip embedded in the file with the artwork. And then as part of when they buy the thing, there's maybe a password that comes with it and a link where they can go and download the actual WAV file, right? So not most people don't get an opportunity to own the WAV file to your song.
Yeah.
And then whatever else you can think to add value and create sort of that VIP cool experience.
So I've been learning, and like some people have NFTs that they buy for their kid, and when it's programmable. So when the kid turns 12, it does something.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of potential technologies out there right now that are being developed.
It's insane.
The sky's the limit. It's really open. Some technology has been made and is supported. Some is future facing. So that's why I say if you get into Clubhouse or whatever and you listen to what's going on, you can kind of keep up with like not only where they are today, but there's Clubhouse rooms where like literally the owner of one of these marketplaces will be there and be discussing like what they're going to be doing, what are their priorities, what are they developing. So you can sort of take that into consideration on how you're going to position your NFTs. You know, I know like Emily Lazar, who is a vocalist, and I'm the band name, I can't even believe that the band name is escaping me right now.
I can put it in later here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but it's early here for me. At least this is before 12. So I'm not up yet. September morning. Thank you. So they've done some NFTs and she's really active in the space as well. But you know, she's one of the few sort of emerging rock artists, that I've seen yet in the space.
And are you
brand new?
Are you, yeah, go ahead. Are you involved? So in Las Vegas, there's a pretty good Burning Man art scene, like the burner communities there. Are you any part of that? Have you seen any of that? Because
not yet.
Okay, so I have some friends who we've been going for 8 years. We run skate camp. Some of my friends have built a couple other art cars and done some cool stuff. And I know a group of them just made a new one called the Meta Phoenix, and it's an NFT is being released or sold now. And I'm excited for them, but actually, ironically, they did some of my artwork. So I'm thinking of, you know, talking to them about how to do it, but they're very busy, yeah. I'm sure, with other things. But I'm excited to see that because Burning Man was virtual this year, a lot of NFTs were created for it that are now being like, they were like art cars and awesome assets. And now they can, you know, turn them into NFTs and do things with them like that. It's kind of gone digital faster because of the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually really excited to perhaps join you next year up at Burning Man and maybe even find a way to, you know, perform some music up there at the festival. That's sort of on my agenda.
It's not really something you book, and it's like,
no, I know.
To perform it, it's almost like if you brought all your gear, it's going to get destroyed. So you have to understand that part of it. So there's a lot lot to do with it, but we can talk about it offline. You can definitely come. They're actually probably doing what's like a burn this year, but it's just not an official event, but a lot of people are going to get, I don't think I'm going to go because I'm up here, but you never know. I'm also considering PubCon, but it's a bit late in the game now for PubCon Florida.
Yeah, Florida's a little bit too far for me, man, under the circumstance. I was disappointed they're not going to be in Vegas again this year as they normally are, but and PubCon for your audience is an SEO convention, but digital marketing as opposed to music, right?
All the SEOs, that's what we all are.
It's an old school SEO nerd convention that where all the OGs typically hang out, right? Brett does a great job of running that conference, but Brett Tapke.
Yeah, I reached out to him, but I haven't heard back. I don't think I'm going to go this year.
For me, I definitely recognize the challenges of the Burning Man, you know, performance aspect. I would definitely like probably just do a DJ set, right, with my music and maybe sing. I'm still debating on the various sort of ways that I can present this music, because it doesn't necessarily have to be like a full, you know, typical band scenario that I've done my whole life. Although there will, I certainly do want that to be like the main cornerstone of what I'm doing. And I'm working with the guitar player right now and some other folks to sort of bring that to fruition. But I also want to be versatile enough to be able to show up with a DJ deck and a microphone and with guitar or not, plug into a Scarlett and, you know, be able to perform in that way as well.
I found that extremely difficult to do. So I bring my whole setup. It's like right there. I can't show you though, but it's like my whole Ableton rack. Like I'm using Apollo Twin and I just added another Apollo Twin and I use a MacBook Pro and I use Ableton and I use like guitars and things, but it's all in there. Like it's almost like the whole band in a box. It's like a one-man show, but I'm just adding a drummer and maybe some dancers and we sing. But it's so, the technology is finally here that I can do what I've always been perfectionisting about and not able to do.
Yeah, totally.
So here we are.
I would probably just put it to tracks, man. I'm not even trying to run a computer, right? Like that's just too much live, I think, for me. I would just like,
well, what's running the tracks?
Well, the tracks would be the songs without the vocals and maybe without the guitar parts, right? Where I could.
But what are you using to run the tracks?
Like probably like a DJ sort of you know, mixer. Where, but I'm not going to obviously use most of the capability of the DJ mixer
because Ableton, my friend. Ableton is your friend, my friend.
Check it out, yeah, man. I've heard a lot about Ableton, and I know FL Studio can do something similar. I'm just really trying to make this so like as plug and play as possible for that scenario, right?
Well, this gear that I'm using is bizarre, but when I play, all the changes happen automatically through MIDI. And my next purchase is a new laptop that's going to be running all my visuals and all my streaming on a separate PC.
Oh, that's cool.
So everything kind of goes into one computer and everything in there comes out and goes into another computer that's completely just visuals and streaming processing so that you don't have to worry about that. And it helps for...
Yeah, I'm going to have to...
I do gaming too, so it's all the same setup, you know? And I meant to ask you, what kind of games are you playing if you're a gamer? Because I know you mentioned that. I wanted to ask you about it.
Bro, you know what? I have so little time for gaming that I've found that the only thing that I can really do is on my phone. And I'm trying to like even cut down that. I play War Robots primarily, which is a mobile game. Cyborg Assassin, ironically, I was playing that before I even came up with the name. So it dovetails nicely. I play a little bit of Fortnite with you know, my the young girl that I live with, although she's much better than me at this point and she can, you know, build like crazy and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm just like, okay, I think I'm slowing you down. So I'm probably going to switch to War Robots and stay there.
It's fun to talk to your friends you haven't seen and play. Like I've been started playing Grand Theft Auto with some friends. I've never played that online before. And it's just fun to go on and play with your old friends and talk to them. You know, I've been playing Hearthstone and Super Mario 2. So
yeah, I find that myself, man, like to your point about the perfectionist stuff, it's like if I can't be awesome at something, I tend not to even fuck with it. You know what I mean? Because it's just like between, you know, being the director of SEO for a digital marketing agency and having Fortune 500 companies that have a certain expectation of my time and my level of expertise and staying up to date on all that stuff. And then, you know, also, I take lessons every week from Chris Broderick, formerly of Megadeth and now an Act of Defiance, right? And so, like, that keeps me pretty occupied, too.
How's it going?
Really good. I mean, he's changed my life completely. I mean, before I met him, I was primarily, like, pentatonic blues-based, you know, like, only. And learning 3-note-per-string scale patterns and marrying that with the caged system, because I'd done cage most of my life. Like I learned that, you know, in the 90s, and it's very positional, right? The five boxes, if you will. And then once you get a feel for there's seven patterns for for three note strings, right? One for each note of the scale. Yeah. And you get them like, you know, once you send all your invites, you get a couple more in a couple days. So yeah, I would encourage your listeners to either, you know, hit you up or hit their friends up. You could probably just get on Facebook and say, does anybody have a Clubhouse invite, and probably get one, right?
Right. Yeah. And because it's three, you can alternate pick.
Yeah, you can alternate pick. And although ironically, it's funny, man, I'm having to go back and really force myself to play triplets and just play triplets, because I've been playing 16th notes in triplet feel for so, like, not feel, but 16th notes in patterns of three for so long that even when I play these three note per string scales, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, you know what I mean? So I've had to really go back and force myself. And by the way, if you've never had one of these stylus picks, these things, you got one of those?
Is that like Kirk Hammett's pick, kind of?
No, this got a diamond head on it.
I got one very close and, to
well, that. You don't, you only use it to practice. Like, you don't use this live. You just use it to practice, because what happens is if you use any more than just like the tip of the pick, it catches on the string and it forces you to stop. And it's absolutely maddening and it's a pain in the ass, but it really does increase your accuracy. And I've used it for a long time, but now that Chris has got me doing other stuff, what do you got there? Is that got?
Oh, it's okay. Close.
There you go.
It's close. It's a Kirk Hammett pick that my buddy left here. And it looks like Kirk Hammett's pick, which I have right there.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of different because it's not, like, if you look at the top edge here.
Yeah, I see. It's actually different.
Yeah, it's got a beveled sort of like deal. And so, like I said, if you go past the picking range that you really want to be at, it catches and makes you stop. And it's really irritating. And I've wanted to like crush it with a sledgehammer numerous times, but it really does increase your speed, which, you know, speed is not everything, but I've never been one. I've always wanted to be able to play as fast as I want, when I want, and to the point, and ironically, that Ozzy Osbourne thing you got right there, the Randy Rhoads tribute, yeah. Trying to play that lead in Crazy Train, man, has been one of those things I've been working on my whole life to get it like as perfect as possible, you know what I mean?
There's a really good video about it where the guy shows the two, Randy's playing two different parts, and they break it down. They break down the little notes he does differently and why it sounds so cool when he does the two different parts.
Oh, you gotta send that to me. Yeah, you gotta send that to me.
I will.
Because, I've actually done a lot. Like, I loaded that solo into FL Studio and I slowed it down, keeping with the pitch, because there was there's a couple things that are commonly tabbed on that solo that are not.
Oh, correct, it's all wrong. The books are all wrong. You gotta watch him do it live, and then he changes it every time, and it's like
He changes it. Yeah, he changes it live. I'm trying to play the album version, but certainly the way he plays it live is a lot easier to execute on that last really fast run, right?
You'll like that video.
I can't wait to see it.
I hate that run too, because it's just a harmonic minor, but why does it sound so good and why is it so different for everyone to play it?
Yeah, it is strange. And then you got, you know, guys on YouTube videos where they're playing it like, you know, they're starting on E flat instead of E, and it's just all, you know, I've seen some people transcribe that song where the, you know, the main rhythm, they're hammering the G instead of the G sharp. And so there's just all kinds of stuff that goes into that song.
It's funny being our age, because I think we grew up like looking at guitar magazines, trying to learn how to play stuff. And now you could just go on YouTube and watch the guy live somewhere and go, oh, that's how we did it. You know?
Yeah. Well, except for Randy, right? Because all the footage is fucked up. And to your point, he changes it live. So, and the shit he does live, you're like, fuck, I got to learn that too. It's fucking amazing.
I got this is my Randy guitar, pretty much. This is my Les Paul. 77. It's my 77 Les Paul.
What's funny is, at least part of the tracks that he recorded that song, it's not the Les Paul. Because there are some things with the whammy bar, right? Like during the solo, that part where a lot of people bend it up and they hammer it, right? That's going down, not up. Right, like the pitch drops, it doesn't go up, so like,
well, he's betting the string, he's going sometimes,
like live, yeah, with the Les Paul, because that's the only way you can do it. But on the actual recording, if you listen to it and slow it down, he's actually bending that down. So he's just trilling that. He's trilling that. Exactly. So
very cool.
So that's been a really, it's been a clinic for me to study that song, man, with, especially with Chris, because, you know, Chris has got such an amazing ear. Like, you know, it's funny when I try, when I play stuff back to him and I do it wrong, he'll tell me what I did wrong without even seeing my guitar, because the Zoom's all, you know, I take Zoom lessons from the dude. So, he's been an amazing, and I've never been into economy picking until now. So that's been the newest thing I've tried to been, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you about. The sweep picking between two strings at a time. Good, 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 good.
Yeah, I'm not really into sweep picking that much, man. It's just never been something that I've been really that down with. But not that I don't respect the hell out of people that can do it. It's awesome. It's just never been something that's appealed to me sonically.
The minuscule.
Although Richie Kotzen can do it in a way that, like, I go, all right, dude, I props.
I'm only meaning, like, the miniature little sweeps that allow you to do the three notes per string. Stuff.
So that's what I've been working on, because at the end of that riff in like I'm going back trying to learn all the classics, right? So in No More Tears, with that, when Zach's doing that, you know, that hammer-on thing, I'm doing that in a way that is using economy picking for that part of it to get that fourth note. I'll show it to you sometime offline, but yeah. And then I'm also learning Symphony for Destruction, the solo in there. And
I know I did it in my high school. I know half of it.
Yeah. So Marty uses economy picking on some of that stuff too.
I love that.
And so that, yeah, me too, man. And but the thing is like the flip side to that is like doing things intentionally is what I'm trying to get at, right? Because now that I can do some of that stuff, I find that, like, sometimes, especially on those blues based leads, I'm picking the second and third string bang bang instead of going down up, and that hinders me at some point to finish the riff in the right way.
I showed my friend how to economy pick, and he got mad at me after. He said, "You fucked me up," and then he's like, "But I love it."
That's what I'm saying, man. It takes,
like, because you're pushing into the strings now.
You gotta sort of, like, realize that, okay, look, I know this thing really well, but now I'm gonna unlearn some of the things that I've learned in order to learn how to do this. But then I'm going to have to go back and reinforce the ability to go either way with it, depending on what I want to do. And it's just it's a journey and a process. And to your point, like, once you get alternate picking down and you get it down really well, you almost don't want to fuck with it, because you're like, no, I know how to do what I know how to do. But if you want to expand your, because some things, like Chris was saying, it's like, dude, if you want to do some things at tempo, you're just not going to be able to do them alternating picking. And, as soon as he told me that and I realized the truth of it, that's when I made the commitment to start to work on this stuff. And it's definitely still a work in progress, but,
very cool.
But I did use some of it on this steampunk, woman solo, in terms of some of those techniques, because I'm constantly trying to use my solos as a way to, like, showcase whatever, like, the latest greatest stuff is that I'm learning and push
right myself. You want to show what you do. You want to come out with a new, you want to be the next Van Halen record that's not a Van Halen record, but it's showing guitar.
Well, I want to make something that requires me to stay on top of my game in order to execute, so I don't get soft, right?
The, like, problem is nobody in the world is listening for something that's requiring someone to stay on their game. They're just listening for what someone showed them. It's such a weird world.
Totally. And that ultimately is the thing, right? So the way that I did these solos for this album was completely different than I've ever done solos before, because, again, solos, the way I used to write solos was we would write the song, and then by the time I got to practice, unless I worked it out, it would just be like, I'm just jamming, right? And so you jam enough times and you find something cool enough times, and it just sort of kind of melds together over time. And then you get in the studio and you find that half of what you wrote doesn't even really work. So then you kind of fuck with it. And then you got to relearn whatever it is you wrote in the studio. Cool. What I did with this album was I literally recorded Steampunk Woman. I literally recorded 100 different tracks, like 100. And then I went back and found pieces that I liked, and sort of put them together. And then I learned how to do it the way that I put it together. And then I recut the whole thing.
Yep.
Doing it like that.
I have like 35 versions of I'm Not Sorry. Like, and I some songs like I've had for like 15 years that are they like my children. I don't have kids. Yeah. So like, they're like my kids until I get them to the point where they're old enough to be on an album that I can release it, you know?
Totally, man. Yeah. All right, well, you know what's, what, yeah, I know we got to go, but you know what's cool is I was going to say, you take some of those alternate versions and use those as the unlockables for your NFTs so that people who are really super fans can get even more of a glimpse into, you know, your thoughts when you were doing the song.
That's exactly the idea. Only you have to pick and choose like which versions you're going to put on there.
Totally. Yeah.
So like, I really enjoyed talking to you. We should do another call sometime, maybe do a jam or something. I definitely would love to play guitar with you. It'd be cool to hear what you got going on when you're releasing the record. Maybe you can come back on when the album comes out or something in September.
The single comes out in September, and hopefully by then, you know, we'll have some plans for some sort of a live show. I'm not sure, like I said, how that's working yet, but
I wanted to ask you, have you been, like, what's the live music scene like? I'm in lockdown here. Where you are, what's the music scene like?
Just started again. So I'm actually going to be going to a show, I think, Sunday night. That's a buddy awesome. Of mine's getting married, and then he's doing a show for the reception. And so I want to come pay my respects. I'm vaccinated. And so that's cool and everything. But as a kidney transplant recipient who's taking medication every day to make sure I don't have an immune system,
yeah,
I'm not really trying to like push the science, right? Like, I'm trying to mitigate risk right now, you know, more so for the people that I love and I take care of than even myself. Because at this point, I've lived a long, blessed life and I have no complaints.
Yeah, you got a lot more to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying. I'm hoping to get all these songs out at least.
Just I've been working. One piece of advice from my producer and I that I work with, we call it avoid the old man rock. You know that thing where you're saying the guys in the black shirts, like old man rock. I'm like, no, that's too old man rock. Got to change that part. Okay, that's good.
Just comes with the bass player. I love all my friends and the people who are my contemporaries, and I have an appreciation and a respect for everything that's come before me. But I'm not trying to repeat the past, man.
Yeah.
I'm an artist living in 2021, and my idol Jimi Hendrix would embrace all new technology possible to see what avenues are out there to tell stories and to create music. And that's the attitude I'm trying to roll into this year and beyond with. And I'm hoping that, you know, that I can create a musical project that appeals to all, you know, age groups and across multiple genres.
So I think maybe, you know, this trying time we've been in has been good for you a little bit, where you sort of had a chance to, you know, look inward and create what you're going to come out with now. So I think we all have had that. So I think that is going to be exciting. I can't wait to see a live show or hear some more of this album. If you want to send me an MP3 or something that I can hear, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. I'll send you a couple.
Okay, cool, man. So with that, I'd like to thank you for Catfish Comstock. I'll put any links up here that you want me to share. And thanks for coming on the Musicians Insider with me, Cronus. And it'll be posted live every Wednesday at noon EST. Thanks.